welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Hi, Burl.
Did you miss me? Did you miss me?
I missed you so much. We didn't do a podcast. You know, I was a bad reporter. Do you know why?
Why?
Because the guest was going, so you were off.
Yeah.
And the guest was going to be Greg Landsman.
Yeah.
And I did not ask Mr. Landsman, Congressman Landsman, a very important question. And would you like to know what that is?
What?
Are you here in Cincinnati?
Mm-hmm.
He was in D.C. He's like, okay, how are we doing this? I was like, oh, you have to be here. So that was like a last second thing. And I did not ask the right questions.
Oh, well. Well, we're here today.
We are.
And we have a rock star guest,
we do.
Sherry.
We do.
You landed a whale, as they say.
John Barrett,
yes.
So, he has quite the title, Chairman, President, and CEO of Western and Southern. But there are so many titles that are like the unspoken titles. Big thinker, developer, tennis tournament dreamer. There are a lot of things that we could call him, and we're going to talk about all the things
today.
The
guy who makes deals to get stuff done in Cincinnati.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean that in a complimentary way.
And does things in the right way. Not the easy way.
So we can talk to him about, all his business accomplishments, things he's been involved with, the effort to keep the tennis tournament here. I mean, so many things we can go down the list. So that'll be a great conversation. Looking forward to that. So let's get this part out of the way quickly.
We're back to the Cincinnati Futures Commission.
The Futures Commission.
You know what? The report came out April, and we haven't just heard like a ton coming out of it. But what was happening over the last couple of weeks is I heard a lot of rumors that there could be an earnings tax coming up in the one summer meeting in August. And so I did this is the kind of story, you guys, I did so much reporting. And we're not having an earnings tax this year. But it really was like, what do people think about it? And that's a huge recommendation out of the Cincinnati Futures Commission.
Which, just to back up, in case people forgot, AFTAB, the mayor, asked a group of business leaders to come together with the goal of putting the city on firm financial footing for the future. The group was chaired by Procter & Gamble CEO John Mueller. And they delivered. It was a list of things the city needed to do, or that, their plan, their vision for how to turn the financial situation around. And there were some interesting things that I think at the time, because we did interview John Mueller on this podcast, it seemed to me that he was advocating for a do-it-all or do nothing approach to the recommendations. Like it wasn't,
that is what he said,
it
yes.
It wasn't the kind of thing you could just pick and choose what you liked or what you thought was politically achievable, that that they really considered it an integrated plan.
So, and if I gave you a quick overview of it, I would say it is raise revenue, save money, sell some things, like a whole bunch, like those kind of like bigger buckets of financial responsibility.
Right.
But it really boiled down to 25 actual recommendations. Now, ourselves and many media outlets picked up on like the very biggest things, the earnings tax, selling some of these things, maybe leasing Lunkin Airport, the biggest things we have written about extensively right after it and even a little bit after it. But if you really boil down the report, there were 25 recommendations in it. And I really wanted to know what the mayor thought of all 25 things. You're not going to sit down and do all 25 things, but if you're talking about an earnings tax and you're talking about all or nothing, where do we stand on the 25 recommendations? It took me a minute to pin him down, but I have to give him a lot of credit. We spent a long time together and we went through them nuanced, point by point, and he really gave me very thoughtful and long and detailed answers, and I had a story about that this week.
You did. So, He doesn't like the garbage fees.
You know what? That was a big thing. People were like, oh my God, they recommended like having it. There isn't one now. And for him to say, no, I don't agree with that was a big deal. Even though it was, if you look at the report, that's kind of one of the minor things in it, but not if you're paying a garbage fee.
Right.
So for him saying that was a big deal. But of course, you know, is really getting at the earnings tax and where we were standing. The best, if some government entity wants to change the earnings tax and they have to ask voters to do it, as the case is here. You know, and the best time to do it is
when
a presidential election, and that's this year.
When the spotlight is turned elsewhere.
And
it is,
well, and Democrats really come out to vote in a county like ours. And, you know, that's just in the scheme of things days away. So it was really kind of, you know, bandied about, but it was too short of a window to do that this year. But then that's what really got us into the conversation about all 25 recommendations. He did say he supports the earnings tax, so I'm not ruling it out to really see that next year. Now, how much that is and what that really looks like, I don't know, but that conversation's not dead. It's just not for this November.
It's just not happening now. Well,
you know, the one thing I do want to say, he did say, speaking of nuances, when it's been talked about in the past, it is always in a time of crisis. Like we're at a pivot point. Oh my God, we're falling off some sort of fiscal cliff. But in this case, they're talking about using it as a growth mechanism to grow the city and for housing and to be the city of the future. And it's a pre-conversation, not a crisis conversation. So I did appreciate that kind of thought about how it would be used and not like we're going to fix this one problem, Columbia Parkway's falling in or whatever.
Gotcha. Well, that's all good. The other headline with AFTAB is he's changed his appearance a little bit.
He did. Oh, Burl, I knew it was going to happen. But you know what? When John Cranley grew a beard, I wrote a story. And so when AFTAB Puravel also grew a beard, discovered.
Wait a minute. I don't remember John Cranley having a beard.
It was lasted a week.
It lasted a week?
Yeah. Yeah. The picture remains in our system because he vetoed like a huge thing during that week.
Okay.
And so like that
I'm
was like
gonna
a
have
big
to go. I don't even
moment.
Remember. What year was that? I don't even remember.
2015.
Okay. I wasn't even here. That's why
so
I don't remember
I did like a little
it.
Story then. I did. Okay. I was upfront, at least like on social media. I did it lightly and he was like, Sherry. I was like, I'm sorry. People are talking about it. I treated it lightly. And even on social media, I was like, is it the biggest story? No. Is it interesting? Sure. We'll
you know,
see.
There was an era when if you were an elected official, you had to be clean cut, you know.
But and, I think and it now, is a signal, youth. It's yeah, generational. You know, right.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah.
People it, are these talking things, about it.
These things go in cycles. I mean, look at, you know, go back to the 1800s and you had Abraham Lincoln. And
well, if I'm just going to be honest, and I guess I will be now. A lot of people do like to talk about the mayor's appearance, and I get a lot of questions about it. Many, many people think he's very, very handsome. And so when people are talking about the beard, they're not like it's inappropriate. They're talking about it because they do think he's handsome and he's changing his handsome appearance.
Is,
that's just,
I noticed,
just a thing
noticed,
about our mayor.
I noticed his hair is a little longer too.
And I've had people ask me like, do you know what hair gel he uses? No, you guys, I don't. And even I have to draw the line and asking him
to,
what kind
I
of hair gel he uses.
That. So, okay, well,
so there's your honest answer.
New look for the mayor.
So it's still summer break. We'll see what happens
Futures,
in September.
Futures Commission, which my prediction, hate to be a naysayer here, but I think it falls apart. I think it's a group of recommendations. It's going to sit in a handsome binder on the, you know, credenza behind the mayor's desk. And they will do some things, but I don't think it's going to be this broad. I don't think it's going to be this broad, comprehensive plan that the commission envisioned.
Because it's hard.
All right. Well, you know, in the political world, it's hard to get things done sometimes. But man, if you're a titan of business, it can be a different story.
That's true.
All right. So shall we talk to one of Cincinnati's titans?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm pleased to welcome to the Inquirer today, John Barrett. I introduced you earlier with like your real titles, Western and Southern, but really, I think at this point, a major city developer. You understand all the parts of the city and everything that's happened in where Western and Southern is located with the Lytle Park, all the Lytle Park project. So we'll give you that bigger scope here, developer. Welcome.
Well, thank you. We used to be in the outskirts of Cincinnati. Now we're sort of right in the dead center of it, as you know. Things go in groups, and development needs to be done in a group fashion so you have lots of things happening to keep your – whatever the development you have is, it's got to be supported by other developments so that it's interesting, vibrant, and possibly changes a lot. And that's what we thought. What we wanted to do – I came back to Cincinnati in 1987, and I'd been in Manhattan for – or at the Bank of New York for 16 years. And just north of Wall Street where I was, a mile north of it or so, there was a really cool regeneration of a rundown part of town. And I watched it. It started with a couple of guys that I knew who had invested in those old homebrew type things, right? And they tried to make a business out of it. So, but once they get that going, these were Wall Street investment type guys. Then they go up there with their friends and have a few beers. Then somebody else opens up a nice greasy spoon. Then somebody opens up a wine bar. Then all of a sudden somebody says, let's take that old apartment building and four of us buy it together, renovate it. We each take a unit. And all of a sudden you create a neighborhood. Seeing that, when I got back to Cincinnati, I was up in Joe Pickler's office at Kroger one day. And he said, you know, John, we're sitting on the edge. This is a Fortune 500 company on the edge of a bad neighborhood. It's the only place in the country I can think that that's true. I doubt that, but that was his thought. So my boss at the time, Bill Williams, said, why don't we do something nice for the city? So I had recruited the only guy I brought from the Bank of New York was our real estate guy, Mario San Marco, with whom I had worked and rented office space and everything. Well, so Mario went to Pace University, which was just, you know, a mile north of Wall Street. So I said, Mario, you know how that all kind of came back. Why don't we pick the two toughest blocks south of Liberty and over the Rhine and see what we can do with them? And that was the start of Bracket Village. So we bought those two blocks. We got tons of grief from Buddy Gray and all the community. Then we got to know them. Then we won their trust. Then we got their endorsements. And then after that, and we got, we still own it too, 30 plus years later. Bracket Village is still ours. I believe it's 105 units. And it's been an anchor. So we bought all that area, like where Cincinnati Color was along Vine Street from, Dennert. Dennert was a low-income guy up there who didn't trust a lot of guys, but he trusted us. So we bought all of his property. And then we started to work on a plan to renovate that and create an over-the-Rhine community that you'd be proud of. In the process, then 3CDC was formed, and we were part of that. And they could get money less expensively than we, and they could get corporate money, and they could get government money. So we ended up selling 3CDC, all of our property that we had not developed, which was a ton. You know where the Mercer Commons, all that stuff is? We owned all of that. Everything east of Vine Street, you know. And we sold it to them at cost, which is important. So they got in there at a very good basis. We took those chips off the table and came back and started working on around our headquarters. But we never got rid of that area. We never lost our desire to see over the Rhine become a wonderful place to live. We just stayed involved with it. And to this day, our guys are very actively involved in over the Rhine, as we should be, you know, it's a mile away.
So, I mean, it's basically been 20 years for 3CDC. If you were to give them a grade, what grade would you give them?
I'd give them a B.
That's high because we have some, I think in the previous podcast, you're a repeat guest. I think we've asked some other grading questions now that I think about it, and you're not always that generous. So I think a B is generous.
Yeah.
When you're doling out grades.
You're known as a tough grader. Yeah,
well, I gave the banks a C, and I never can get over that with Jason Williams.
Oh, no.
He keeps bringing it up every 5 years. And I was being nice there too.
Okay, a B.
You don't want to create, I mean, I think they do a very good job financing their buildings. I don't think that the collective vision is all it could be. There's so much more. There are very few people that you'll meet who have that long-term view of what could be and have the ability to see it through.
No, agree. And you Steve Leeper, you know, I was just recently talking to him and it's kind of like, what's next? And he's like, are you pushing me out? Like, I think he has like still a long-term vision. What do you think about 3CDC? So we're going to talk about Lytle Park and everything happening down there. But since we're on the 3CDC topic, what do you think about them pivoting? It's not just over the Rhine. We are 20 years down the line. It's, you know, they started with Fountain Square, but they've kind of, you know, pinballed around a little bit. And now with the Convention Center District, what do you think about the
moving? They obviously missed it on Fountain Square.
What makes you say that?
Take a look at it.
I do think it draws a vibrant crowd, but I'm interested in hearing.
The bank has been rendered useless, you know, the Fifth Third. It's a very difficult place to be if you're in the bank. What they could have done is left the skywalks up, put those door, like, you know, like a garage door on the south end, on the south end of the skywalk, and had those restaurants have outdoor 7 or 8 months a year and then close them in the other 4 months. The ability to get around the square on the skywalk was very important to people who were working in the bank building and wanted to go have a beer, whatever or not. There was like a system going on. The 3CDC guys did not understand that. My feeling was we should have left the fountain where it was. What we did to the square is not attractive or appealing to me. We put up an ice rink, which blocks the square off for 3 months a year. And other than the professionals that are paid to skate on it, and then maybe an hour or two a week, other people, what I would have done is put a really cool fountain in, maybe 3 feet high wall with a big fountain stuff, like a Bellagio style, but smaller because it's of the size, and had it lighted and have it a place that every business person in town from out of town would want to spend 15 minutes a night just watching it, the way you do if you go to Las Vegas and see the fountain. It's just a natural, free way to create excitement. Then around it, whether it's above McCormick and Schmick's, where the old Palomino was, what, you would have a windowed restaurant watching this at night. It'd be the most ideal place to have a dinner. And probably the Fifth Third, I would not have walled it off with the stained, with the smoked glass. I would have made a part of it. It would have been the place everybody wants to be. Now it's all driven by entertainment. What's the entertainment? It's if you think it works, I don't. It could have been so much better for a lot less money. So kudos to 3CDC for doing it, because you wouldn't want the development department of the city to do it. What I don't like is the plan they have. It could have been so much better. And we'd still be raving about it instead of, we got to change it and spend another 30, 40, you know, and that's what we're looking at now. So that was a miss, okay?
Do you think people are talking about changing it?
I know they are.
Okay. What are they saying?
Well, you tell me.
Well, I feel like there's some vibrancy being built. They're calling it the Fountain District now, and there is some...
Branding. Oh, branding.
Okay.
Oh, we need more branding. This is the city of brands. Did you know that?
I love having a podcast for real conversations like this, because you don't always get these answers.
We love branding. Well, you're in the KAO building, right?
Yes.
And what happened to that great brand of Jergens? P.S. Went east.
Yeah.
Way east.
Right.
Or west, however you want
to
do
it. No, it's west. It's right along 75 now.
But I mean, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
No. Branding is here and now, gone. What's important is life, vitality. I want to go there. We have this vision, as you guys probably know, we've acquired the rights to acquire the Masonic Temple. That could be the all-time entertainment mecca for this part of the country. It has everything you could ever dream of in it. There's a 320-person church. There is a 900-seat ballroom, seats around the edge. There are four huge rooms. There are three good-sized restaurants. There's a library. There's a big ballroom in the basement. below the Taft Theater, there's a 400, not seat because it's not seats, but 400 on the floor, whatever, for concerts. The Taft, I think, holds 2,100 people. All of that in a 340,000-foot envelope. There's a 500-person amphitheater on the roof, which you've probably never seen.
I had no idea.
No, I've been in the basement for
nobody
something.
Nobody does. Yeah. Nobody does. It is so cool. And there is a vision that you could take one floor and make it like a family floor, have exercise stuff in one of the huge rooms, and the other room have a place for toddlers to teenagers. It's so big. And then coffee baristas and different things like that in the hallway in between. So you have a vibrant place to go. If we build a parking garage around it, if you're using the Taft or using the facility, your parking would be substantially discounted to if you were a public parker or a hotel guest, right? We'd like to build a hotel on top of the new parking garage we're going to build there. And that would give you another 300 rooms. We're studying that right now. See if there's a need for it.
But, so you have the rights to, like, first refusal, that kind of rights, or you bought?
We're committed to buy it. We're committed to buy it.
You're committed to buy it.
They got to move over.
How much does something like that cost?
That's free. They're going to move over to the old Phoenix, which is dying.
And I'm in a beautiful space.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And the space that we're getting from them is beautiful. But the thought is, it's not a done deal. It's still, you know, in the early planning stages. But the thought is to create a great center for entertainment. So you're sitting on your couch, wherever you live, Mount Auburn, whatever. You go, what are we going to do tonight? Let's go down to the center. Let's see what's going on. And you have more than one venue down there. You know, you might have a Nashville room. And every week you have a good band plays Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. You might have another deal that does a different type of entertainment. If the Sundance thing ends up in Cincinnati, I can't think of a better place for it to be.
Same.
There.
Did you get to hang out as part of the site visit yesterday?
No, but I did talk to them.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Not to them, to Christine.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's that'd be cool.
That would be.
And January is a.
We have so many great theaters here, and this would just be one more, but. We are
this, yeah, and it's all, you know, all that, the whole theater thing is changing so quickly.
So
I'm glad we don't own any movie theaters.
Are you basing this idea on something you've seen somewhere else in the
Maybe.
Country, or is this come on where like
little of each,
little of each. Okay, but that's always in build upon it.
Yeah.
So
everywhere you go, every time you go to another city, you see things, and you know, it's like whatever your sales style is 7% of that guy. 15 of that lady, you know, on and on. And all of a sudden you get your own style. Well, Cincinnati has its own style. And we're just trying to help move the envelope so that we get the most out of it.
How long have you been thinking about this?
Long time.
10 years?
Easily. Longer. Yeah. It also has a 320-person church in it. So imagine
it's
if you
had. It's
still
a church now. And that's why in there.
It's a facility of a church. It's 320 pews. Okay. Yeah. But it's non-denominational, whatnot. But look at it this way. We could do your rehearsal dinner. We could do your wedding. And we could do your reception all under the same roof and probably put your guests up upstairs. We now have many weddings taking place, and they're using one of the two hotels we have in Lionel Park as it is. And about 2 weeks ago, Mitchell's opened up. On the
first
floor.
I saw that spa.
And they tell me
the spa in a hotel downtown always.
It's only been 2 weeks, but they're Saturday business. They bring in extra folks because for all the weddings, everybody comes in to get it done. We put a bocce court in the park because every mother of the bride worries about the groomsmen during the day. if you can get them in the park for 2 hours with no liquid. Yeah, exactly. No bar. You've killed a lot of time.
I'm an Italian girl. Bocce's fun.
Oh, this some of these guys are good. There's every day there are people playing bocce there. Go by at lunchtime. There's 20, 30 people playing. They have leagues and everything else.
I'm going to do that.
Cool.
If you're looking for me on a nice sunny, next sunny day, bro, that's where I'll be.
I thought pickleball was the rage, but now,
well, it is.
Now we know we can do bocce at the, yeah.
Go down to Sawyer Point. pickleball is the rage.
It is. I mean, I get my hair done down that way. I could get any time of day that I am in there. So I sometimes go like before work, sometimes after. Pickleball, they're all full, the pickleball courts.
So our thought was create a neighborhood that people want to be in, that we can recruit people to, because we're not a work from home company. We're here every day. We want people to want to come in every day, to want to be a part of a big, robust, good team. And it works. And people are happy to do that. It's a different environment from what other companies do. And we only need 3,000 people to see the world the way we do. You know, that's all we need. There's plenty of those guys out there. I'll tell you where we have great success is the first generation college graduates. They can't wait to get in and get roll their sleeves up and learn and get going. It's a beautiful thing.
That leads to a question I was going to ask you, that it seems like we've accepted the fact that downtown needs to transition from largely a place people go to work to a more residential lifestyle. And we hear, you know, every day about somebody who wants to take what was office space, convert it to residential. Do you think that's short-sighted? Do you think that's knee-jerk and that we can actually bring people back downtown to work?
The economics of that is really hard to make that work. Convert an old building and spend a lot of money. I mean, we're in this world. I'd much rather have it a corporate mecca with plenty of housing close by so you can walk to work, but have the social intercourse of company people working with other company people at lunch, whatever, talking, sharing ideas. You can't beat that. You can't get that at home. You can't get that in the internet. You got to be live like we are. And that is really good. And this city is so commutable. It is so easy to get around.
Unless you've lived here your whole life and haven't tried to commute from other places, you don't appreciate that.
Oh, that's so true.
But just spend, I don't know, for example, live in D.C. for 6 or 7 years and you understand how easy it is to get around.
I was gone for 16 years. And I look forward to my commuting time because it's good thinking time. Mm-hmm. You can turn the radio off and just...
It's also a good time to listen to podcasts. So we are... Because you understand all of this, and I understand as much as I've reported on, there are so many things that are turning residential. First of all, are there enough people to move into all of these places? Like, is there a groundswell of people to move into all these places to make them residential? And can a residential apartment, because these are apartments, produce the same kind of income for the city that a business would?
No.
Because, I mean,
can't.
The earnings tax, I guess, is on people, too.
Yeah, like, but it can't. And the economics of what you pay for rent per square foot in a business versus an apartment, there's a big difference there. So the apartment owner versus the business building owner have two different levels of income in which to maintain those buildings. No. What you want is you want to have some great buildings. I mean, great buildings. You want to have your law firms and your accounting firms and stuff close in, and you want that to be an anchor. You want that to be an attraction. They don't know what they want to do when they get out of school. They want to learn. And the best place to learn is from other folks. And that's what's so cool about a downtown. You know, I was in Manhattan in the city for 13 years. It was fantastic. Actually, it was much better then than it is now. But it was one of those places where everybody could teach you something. Even the guy at the newsstand. I mean, there was something to learn from everybody. And I love that environment. It was exhilarating. We want that here. You know, we have more of a laid-back attitude as people in Cincinnati. But it's a nice attitude. It's not a mean one. So there's plenty to be said for that. But a little edge never hurt anybody, you know?
But do you think that it is possible to attract new large businesses here? Like, could something come into the GE building? I mean, there's still a lot of room left in there.
I definitely think so. I definitely think so. I'm actually working with somebody right now, a big Fortune 500, to move here from out of state. And I've been assured it's going to happen, but it's been it hasn't, you know, so you just kind of like keep.
All right. So there's only 500. Whip out the list, Burl, and let's go down just go, one by one.
Can you confirm or deny like this is the company?
Six of them what about are here. Yeah. So like you shorten
JP
the list.
Morgan Chase, but I don't want to tell anybody that. You should see their new building. It is spectacular. They're building a new building on Park Avenue, right across the street from the old Pan Am building, maybe 20, 30 yards from the train station. It is monstrously big, and they're going to have everything in the world in it. I mean, the girders that are going into that thing are like as big as this room.
What makes you want to help and do this kind of thing when you're running your own company and you have your own developments? Like, what makes you want?
It makes everything we do better, makes everybody want to work for us. When I go to meetings, I was in one this morning with a bunch of our younger accountants. I looked around the room and said, this is a great group of young people. You know, these are good people. We have lots of meetings in our company. We encourage meetings. I meet so many good people that when I joined the company, there were not anywhere near the number of people like that there are now. These are highly educated, highly motivated folks. But what they like about us is the stability, the fact they know about career, the fact that they're being mentored and tutored and helped along the path of it. We just have one rule. You can't, if you move, change jobs, you can't post for another job for at least a year. And we encourage at least 18 months, ideally, because you don't know if you really like a job or not right away. You got to feel it. But it helps us if we cross-pollinate. People go from here to here to here to here. It helps you, but you got to be there long enough to get the ropes to figure out how the business works. We're a bunch of different businesses now. We're no longer just – the company I joined was selling insurance door-to-door. In 1986, I was on the board, not an employee. And we had a strategic planning meeting, and I said to my boss, my eventual boss, we have a dynamite strategic plan for the Korean War, which was over 30 years ago. There's nobody home anymore. Gas is no longer 30 cents a gallon. You know, it was like back then, it was like $3 or $4 a gallon like it is now. It's an uneconomic way to grow your business. So rather than hurt that, let that business keep going, but put our money into new businesses. And we have. And we're 10 or 11 businesses right now. And if you break them down into other things, we're 15 or 20 different things going on. Each of those has a manager. Each of those has a CFO. Each of those has a budget. And every quarter, we go through everybody's numbers. Everybody's. And I'll never forget, the guy used to run ABC Cap Cities, Dan Burke. He said to me, John, I couldn't stand it, but I knew it was the most important thing I did, because we're going over this stuff every single quarter. The people realized how important it was. If it was important to me, it was important to them. And he was so good about that. I've been fortunate. I've been mentored by the best, and lots of them. They didn't even know it, you know, but it's cool that way. And what you do is you learn from the guys who've done it. And if there's an age difference between you and the people you're talking to, in my case, between 15 and 30, 35 years, they are much more willing to impart to you what they have experienced and done than they are to people their own age. They don't want to brag to their friends. They don't want to brag. But to a younger person, they're not bragging. They're telling you their story. And it's cool. And I eat it all up.
It is. It's up to the young person to listen and learn.
And many don't.
So you sort of like breeze through the John Barrett story. Local kid, St. X High School, learned the business in New York, probably not thinking you were going to come back to Cincinnati when you were in New York.
I didn't. No, I was on a career path there that might have ended up – I figured I'd end up 1, 2, or 3 in my company. And when I went to leave at the Bank of New York, you had to have – the tradition was you give them 2 weeks. You might have 2 hours. You might have 2 days, whatever. I had 90 days, and I called the boss, and I said, I got to go, man. I mean, you know, you haven't put a replacement here for me. I got to go. He said, come on over. We'll have lunch. I said, no, I'm not doing that, because I knew he wanted me to stay. And I would have been very happy there, but I've been long retired by now, and the impact I could have here was far better. They have a great company, still a great company. It's the oldest bank in New York, third biggest bank in New York, headquartered in New York. Great people, still close to them. The CEO, relatively new CEO, is a really wonderful guy. He's a Brit, and we spent some time together. They have good people. But this was an opportunity to take a well-capitalized, somewhat sleepy outfit company and energize
it. You're talking about the life – when it was just a life insurance company.
Just a life insurance company now. Life insurance, somewhere around 28 to 30% of what we do now.
And I'm guessing the largest segment of business you're in now is the financial services area?
Yes, and we're
– by far.
We are a preeminent money manager. In between Atlanta and Chicago, Pittsburgh and St. Louis, I don't think we have a peer. I really don't.
So why still do the life insurance game?
It's the backbone of our company, and it's so important to people's financial security. That's the thing that's not sexy. They don't want to do.
Right.
But God, their heirs love it.
And that's so true. You meet with a financial plan and you're thinking about all this money you're going to invest. And the first thing they say is, do you have an estate plan? And what's your life insurance look like?
And we've never had one policyholder who died come back and complain.
100% satisfaction.
Is there something wrong with that?
No, not at all. And then, as you touched on also, then you get into real estate. You launch Eagle Real Estate Group.
And they're doing a fantastic job. And what we did was my predecessor did very well and made a lot of dough before he joined the company in the shopping center business. So about 20 years ago, I was running the company. I said to him, I think the party's over. Oh, it's been good to us, John. I said, it has been good to us. But I think it's time we get out. And of course, he supported me, but he thought I was crazy. It's one of the best moves we ever made. We sold all of our shopping centers. We got out of all of our office buildings, except for the new one that we built, all the medical office buildings, all that stuff. And then we went into hotels, selective hotels, and multifamily. And the hotels we've done have been very successful. We started out with Holiday Inns back, 50, 60, 70 years ago. And then they went through a whole change in Holiday Inn. Then we had a partner, Weingartner Hammonds, who are wonderful guys. And we partnered with them on doing the Holiday Inns. Well, then they kind of moved on into the Marriott world, which we went with them. But they've done other things too. That business has now been sold and we still work with their successor company. But we're on the development side. We're pretty good at that ourselves. They're very good managers. And when we did the downtown Phelps Hotel, no one believed it would be the success it was. When we wanted to do the Lytle, nobody saw how that
could be.
Phelps
is some long-term if you need it, right?
Yeah, but it's also overnight. And with the kind of the way TripAdvisor and stuff works now, the overflow from the Lytle is in the Phelps. And it's happy. But guys like A.G. Laffley spent 3 years in the Phelps. Loved it. He had a two-bedroom. It's a great building. Well, we've just put $2 million into the kitchen, and we're going through what they call a PIP in the hotel business. In two more years, we should renovate it. We're not going to wait that long. But we're going to turn the first floor into a restaurant and conference center, as well as the first floor of the hotel, and have a wall, separate entrances. And that bar restaurant is going to hop, and it's going to have a wonderful carryout menu so people can have a very good meal at home. And they didn't know they were going to do that till 5 p.m. So a guy in a tower calls and says, what do you have tonight that looks good? I'll be there in 30 minutes. Gone. That's what people want.
Immediacy.
Yeah, they don't want Swanson's TV dinners.
Or DoorDash from the same old chain restaurants.
Right. So we think we filled that niche. So we were asked to do the hotel at the Banks because they needed something down there.
The AC Marriott?
Yeah.
Right across from the ballpark?
So we did that, and that's turned into a world-class hotel. Very popular among younger people. It's all, high-polished glass and chrome and stuff. The only rug in the whole place is on somebody's head.
Honestly, you're kind of the king of the rooftop bar.
Don't
now
you
that
think?
I'm thinking was, about it.
You know, hello.
When I have visitors and I want them to take in the city, that's one of the places I head is the rooftop of the AC Marriott.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, I was just at the rooftop of the Lytle Park Hotel. It is so fantastic up there.
That is, it's considered one of the 10 best hotels in the United States.
We saw each other. He was eating dinner. Yes. It was spectacular.
Is that where you coerced him to come on the podcast? Because
she worked him over.
Oh, okay. All right. I gotcha.
But it was, that was a labor of love. And we get heavily involved in how these things look. I changed the lobby in that building maybe 6 months before they laid it because the architects had a black floor. And I said, this is not Vegas with like some gold inlays here and there. And that's the wrong look. This is going to be on a park. We want, you know, we wanted the light floor. We want that splashy bar in the middle.
It is beautiful.
And I wanted to have the wine glasses and stuff overhead. So I pulled them down like that, but they – you know, you get into an argument with an architect and you go, I'm going to give on a few things because I want to get certain things. And so you do that. But we've got good entertainment there, really good entertainment across the street, the Phelps, on that roof. We did those two roofs and nobody in our organization thought they would work. They both work. So you've got one holds 90 and one holds like 65 or 70. And the newer one that overlooks 4th Street going west, I think that's the coolest place in town.
Because heck, you can see the fountain below.
Oh, that looks good too, mm-hmm. doesn't it? Yeah, we designed that. I mean, we didn't go to some architect for that. That's what we want.
So you have a good design eye. So this is going back to the Masonic Temple of that vision.
Well, that'll be neat. Like the do you like the lobby of the hotel of the office tower, the Great American Tower?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we have to get into that too. We're talking about, you know, Lytle, we're talking about Masonic Temple. But as far as leaving your mark on the skyline of Cincinnati, your involvement in Great American Tower has to be, I don't know how you top that.
Yeah, that's cool. But you know, I'm
literally and figuratively.
He's about to dismiss it.
I don't know how you top
that's
that.
Cool.
Now, let me ask you, I've been wanting to ask you this. There's sort of this, like, I don't want to call it a beef, but when people say, what's the tallest building in Cincinnati? They say, well, if not for that crown, it would be Carew Tower. So does the crown count or not?
Heck yeah.
All right. I knew you were going to say that, but that's the definitive answer.
It is so pretty.
When they put the last piece of it on, there were two guys on this hunk of steel. And all of a sudden, they're lifting it up. And I can see that the guide wire is getting so taut. And I thought, this is not going to end well.
Oh, no.
You know, these guys are going to go up like 50 stories, and I'm like, oh my God. They get it up there and they screwed it in and it all worked. But that's why it's so tall. I mean, you can't build the second biggest building in town.
I agree with that.
I mean, go big or go home, right?
Well, we pre-COVID, we actually did a plan for another one. Yeah.
You did?
But it's probably not going to happen because the world's changed.
It has.
And the cost of building has gone up. But it's really a cool look. Cool.
Where would it have been?
Over by us.
That would extend the skyline then.
I mean,
the east side.
Probably not going to happen.
Well,
would you give it like a 5% chance of happening? Would you give it any percent?
I would give it 25%. But that's not a good odd. You're not going to bet on it.
That's true.
And the cost of construction's doubled since then. They say there hasn't been much inflation. Let me tell you, there has been. Steel. Wood's cheaper, but bit by bit, these things are expensive. And about 20% of the cost of a brand new building is furnishing it. And that's an arm and a leg.
But, so we've gone through this list of greatest hits. Oh, go ahead.
Would it have a tiara of sorts too?
No, it had something neater.
You got to tell us now.
I can't.
Case it happens.
It would have a giant spire, Sherry. That's how you would get the height.
It'd be cool. And way up in the top, we were going to have a 10,000-foot floor for parties, for conferences and stuff. And it was going to have an opening to the south where you could go out and stand on it. And, you know, I mean, you're 50-something stories above the city. It's awful windy up there. So it's one of those things you do a couple of times, but not every day.
Right.
But it would have been neat. And that would have been a good spot for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, what we wanted to do is, though, when we get the once we get the Masonic Temple, you know, have to rename it and do all that good stuff. But the building has been well maintained, even though it's old. It's clean and whatnot, but needs new bathrooms, new HVAC, new lighting, all that stuff, and some modernization of the interiors, clearly. But the bones are great.
What would some sort of timeline look like?
Well, that's a good question. It's probably 3 years out to your finish.
That's not that long.
But we need to build the garage around it too, you know.
What is the starting timeline? That seems soon.
Since we haven't closed on it, we can't.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm not going to put something on. That's just, it's a dream. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But generally, if you dream something, you know, I always believe it's if you outdream, outthink, outwork, you will outperform.
So what I was going to ask, as we go through this list of greatest hits, have you had what you would call an epic failure, and what did you learn from it? Where maybe you pushed too hard or you didn't listen to the...
There were some M&A transactions that we could have made that would have been very good for us that had... I was younger in my career and I was being very careful. I wish now I had swallowed and taken them over.
Gotcha.
These are household name companies that would have been part of our deal. But in all cases, these companies wanted us to run it. Okay. But those boards wanted to survive as well. And that can all be worked out. But our performance, measured by the numbers, is the best in the land in our business. The best. No one realizes that. We're not public. So no one realizes that. But our return on assets and our accumulation of equity is the best in the business. You're the safest risk with us. If you want to buy a life insurance policy, we're the last company that's going to go down. The last. And it's important to me that we continue that thought. Keep it going. We could have grown more if we had been willing to just swallow some more risk. But I'm not unhappy with what we've done at all. I mean, we were $3.6 billion when I started. We were $117 billion at the end of last month. It's not bad.
Not too shabby.
No. And we'll keep cranking. We had our best year last year ever, our best 6 months ever so far this year. And this is in an environment that's tough sledding. You know, it's not all layups. But in the process, our investment crowd, you know, we got maybe 250 people doing investing for us. We do the bulk of our investments inside. They're the best. And so if they can get more return on the same class of asset than you can, they're going to outperform you. And they do. And we're very conscious of having really good people. I'm telling you, it's a high to walk around our building and see the quality of the people there. And they all got to wear one of these every day.
That's a tie, everybody.
You know, I worked out west for a while and I lost my tie habit. So, and then I came back to Cincinnati and I wasn't the only one. You do wear a sport coat a lot. I mean, sometimes.
Where were you out west?
I was in Reno, Northern Nevada, with the company, with Gannett. Yep.
The last dressy place in town, I feels like, besides Western and Southern, is City Hall. Like, no one gets dressed up anymore. It's, people wear ties to City Hall, though.
Well, they do to Congress, too, in D.C.
Is it required or just people feel obligated to wear a tie if you're
required.
A guy?
Required.
Wow.
I always dress like the boss, too. That's like a...
We don't work from home.
So after the pandemic, you were right back in the office.
5 weeks.
No pushback?
What?
Any pushback from your employees?
I don't think I heard any.
We're hybrid. But, you know, by the nature of our work, people aren't supposed to be in the office anyway. They're supposed to be out gathering news.
It is, and people are. But it is also about creating a space where people want to be. Like our new building, like we like coming in, and we have hotel desks, and we like to sit by each other.
Magic that happens when people who work downtown get together for lunch or, you know, happy hour or whatever, so they can learn and get ideas from each other. That's not just back in the office. That's back in a center of commerce.
And you want to have a place of comfort. That's right. You need a place of comfort where you feel like you belong. That's why I don't like the hoteling concept. And the hardest jobs in the world now to get filled and keep filled are in the accounting industry. They went to hoteling first. They said, oh, you can bring your – open up your briefcase and put the picture of the family on the wall. Yeah, right. Do that once, you know.
For us, though, it's working together. Like if I'm working with the court reporter or I'm working with the police reporter.
Same with us. And you want to know that you can count on people, you know, where you can find them. Yeah. We're spread out in a bunch of different buildings. It'd be cool to have everybody together. Because the social intercourse of being in the same building far beats having to walk 400 or 500 feet to another building.
You could just build another tower. See how that works?
What an idea.
So we're running towards the end of our time together.
Question,
I have a tennis question. Did you have a tennis question, Sherry?
Before you get there, I'll just say thing. That we were minding our own business last year. We were at our executive offsite, 22, 23 people. And somebody said, has anybody seen today's Wall Street Journal? No, why, what's up? You know, and they said, Howard Schultz from the Starbucks Foundation went to the Harvard Business School and they gave them five criteria. And your job is to go out and find in the Fortune 500 the best places to work. We were the only company in Cincinnati in the top 100. Were we 29? 29 in the whole United States. For the best places for a career, all that stuff. And that was unvarnished. We didn't know there was such a study. And I ran into the people who did this study later, and they said, we never heard of you guys, but wow, you guys are something else. That's what we've created with the corporate culture. The corporate culture that we've created our company is better than any I've seen anywhere else. And that's the one thing I learned in all those years in Wall Street and then here too. Corporate cultures eat strategy, planning for lunch. If you get the right people motivated by the right things, doing the right things the right way, you're going to win every battle, everyone, no setbacks. And that's our key. So the tennis was not unlike that.
Okay.
The USTA was really racked up by COVID. They'd spent $1 billion on Queens, Flushing Meadow, and nobody could come. They borrowed the money. Tick, 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 tick. They were in trouble. So when they saw what the Madrid tournament sold for, they put ours on the market. They wanted an entrepreneur to buy it, not unlike a Larry Ellison who has the one out in Palm Springs. Well, we put a very good bid up. We probably lost by less than $5 million, but maybe more than $1 million. And we're talking about almost $300 million. They sold it to Ben Navarro. The banker on the case was B of A out of Charlotte. Ben's credit card business is out of Charlotte. He now doesn't live in Charlotte anymore. He lives down in Charleston, South Carolina. So they bought it. Then we met, and, you know, I thought, God, we got to somehow keep it here. And I think that and his management team was Charlotte guys. It was going that way. They came to the tournament last year as owners.
They were planning to build the facility already.
They came to the tournament last year as owners. And when they saw how cool it was, how good it is, and then a number of the downtown CEOs made themselves available to Ben, and we got six of us, I guess, to go together and pick up the sponsorship together. And we convinced them that it should be the Cincinnati Open, not the Midwest Open, that the companies in town would relate to that far more than Midwest. I mean, then why not have GM as one of the major sponsors, right? But the importance of this tournament, 125 years, all of the history, and also it's the Midwest's best tennis facility and best tournament. You've got big tournaments in Atlanta, Miami, D.C., parts of Connecticut, New York City, Boston. You don't have them in you know, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Chicago, you know. Obviously, Chicago would have liked to have gotten the tournament too. And thank God they did.
They have enough.
They got enough. And but you think about August in Chicago, that is the height of the season up there. This would have been a big deal. But Ben made the decision with the very able help of Bob Moran, his right-hand guy. They said, we can't duplicate this there. They probably have 2.5 times the land out of the box and the ability to get more. And they're going to make this a year-round facility. And Ben's daughter is now one of the top tennis players in the world. And Emma will be here, right? And hopefully she'll go a long way in the tournament. It's going to be great. And the next year goes to 2 weeks. Okay. So we are 100% on board. We're just glad that they had open ears. And they're creative guys. And they realize this is the best place for it.
So after all that work occurred to keep the tournament here, you wrote an op-ed for the Enquirer that we published. You're a man of few words. It's one of our shorter op-eds, which I appreciated because, you know, I used to work at USA Today, so everything was brief. You said in your op-ed, you thanked BMOC Capital, who owns the tournament, for pushing us to do the right thing, but you didn't elaborate. And I've always wondered, what was the push we collectively, Cincinnati, needed in terms of that tournament that probably wouldn't have happened had we not almost lost it?
We got the government funding, $130 million. Cincinnati companies never would have got that out of Columbus. Wouldn't have happened. And we talked about that. We said that's the one thing we couldn't have. We might have gotten 50, something like that, but we never would have got 130. We got that. That was a big deal. And we got the other downtown companies to all throw in real money, you know, seven-figure money. And by doing that, everybody's invested. So no one wanted to lose it, but we all had a hand in winning it, which was really cool.
You know, they were talking about last year, like with some sort of bridge to having downtown things. Is that coming this year? Like, will we see?
I look for next year. We had a plan. We didn't go far with it. But we had a plan that if we had bought it, to take a look at bringing it downtown. Because when we do like the regionals for the NCAAs and stuff in the old Heritage Bank Center, which we've done before, downtown's alive when it's tournament time, alive when there's people on the streets, there's guys walking around and they're 7 feet tall and they're yellow sweats in the middle of February, March. That's cool. The tennis is the same thing. The Doll used to stay in the Phelps. He'd walk around downtown in a bright yellow top and bottom, like, and he didn't have the head pad on, but I mean, I think I knew who that guy might be in shorts, you know, he loved it. Sampras always stayed downtown, but as time goes on, I don't know. I suspect BMOC will build a nice hotel conference center
up in Mason,
right there as part of the facility, because they want that to go a 12 months a year deal. They'll do a good job of it. They're smart guys.
Now, I know a nice hotel, though. one more quick question. As long as we're planning all of downtown and talking about bringing things vibrancy, let's pretend we are building an arena. Where would you put it?
I would probably put it down there somewhere.
He's pointing to the banks, everybody.
Yeah. From our studio high atop downtown Cincinnati.
Is there room for it?
Facing the riverfront.
You're pointing to the middle.
Right to the banks.
My first choice would be, it would take some doing to put it where the convention center was and put the convention center under it and a lot of parking under it and have the arena on top of it and hotel as part of it, maybe two.
Is there a similar
structure
to that in another city?
I'm sure there are.
Target Center might be like that. I'm not sure. Yeah.
I never do that, though. I never see those.
It just all comes out.
I went to somebody with a great idea in Cincinnati, and it was perfect for his business. And he said, well, who else has done it? I said, I have no idea, but it's right for you.
Yeah.
But he was a good Cincinnatian.
So he stayed in the box.
Stayed in the box, and we moved on.
How have you I know you said you had the last question. I've been trying to get to this question, and you like threw me a softball, so I'm going to swing. Is you're not a guy who's colors in the lines in a city that demands it. How have you endured for so long? Like, how did you not get run out of town?
Why would I be run out of town?
Because you do things your way.
So? That's why you're not run out of town.
But it's also the philanthropy. Huh? It's also the cancer center, $103 million he's raising. I saw at the Heartball 2 years ago, you whipped a $1 million check out of your pocket.
Everybody,
like, the philanthropy matters too here.
Everybody wants their will. When we want ours, we don't give up. Most people do. We don't. We might not win that battle, but we're not going to lose that war. When we did the park and the hotel, we had plenty of people without thinking about it who were just against us, not realizing that the women who were – they really weren't – they were only 26 the end of Louisiana when we were talking about, not 78. They are all in such better conditions and quarters now than they were before. If they stayed there, they were going to renovate the building while the people were in it, which means a patch job. Even the rats were heartbroken. You know, I mean, the place was a dump. I mean, a dump. And then we literally gutted it. And because it was so poorly constructed, it sort of built like a swimming pool where you, the gunite, you know, you do the cement to hold everything together all the way around, all the way through, because it had wooden beams that were inches shorter than each other. I mean, 100 years, these things age.
Yeah.
It was a discount job 100 years ago. So, but when we had set our minds to do something, we can be convinced not to do something, but not because it's your opinion, because you have a better idea. We're open to that. Lots of things we've wanted to do that we didn't do, but most things that we've wanted to do, we're still, if we haven't done them, we're still working on it.
All right.
Run out of town.
No.
Just trying to get you going.
As you do.
I do.
As you do. All right.
It's been we've loved Cincinnati, and it's been good to us, and I think we've been good to it.
Well, I would say no one's trying to run you out of town. In fact, last year you were honored as a Great Living Cincinnatian, which is one of the most prestigious honors I think you can get in this town. So congratulations on that. The list of other awards and accolades, we'd be here another 20 minutes if we read them all. So thank you for making time for us and our
happy
listeners.
To be here. Thank you guys. And let's bring those Reds home. And then more importantly, I think now the Bengals.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Thanks
John. Guys. Thank you very much.
Well, that was a great conversation. Like, I really did kind of, I was thinking about the tennis tournament because it was the Western and Southern Tennis Tournament, and it's going to be so much more this year, and he loves tennis. And I was like, this would be a really good time to have him on. But there are so many things he's involved in. That was great to hear, like, kind of what's next.
There was a lot to unpack there.
I know. I'm going to scurry off and learn about Fountain Square now.
Oh, yeah. He gave 3CDC a B.
Only because he is a tough grader.
He is a tough grader. Yeah. I thought that was a little generous. I think he knows he's on a podcast people are listening to. I bet.
He did wink.
But man, what a, you can't walk around the city and not see his impact here. And we talked about, the tallest building and everything, but he has just been, whether it's the banks, whether it's, his involvement in the, and I've said this before, that I think it's, we have our elected officials, but Cincinnati is a city where the leaders, the business leaders, do have a lot of influence, for better or for worse. And I think he's used that power for good. He doesn't, I'm sure he has his list of detractors. Anybody who makes things happen is going to piss a few people off. But, what a great conversation.
Yes.
All right. So,
are you recovered?
Am I recovered from the Foo Fighters? What a run of music events we've had here in the past couple weeks, and we still have a few to go. We're sitting here overlooking Paycor Stadium, where they are converting the layout for the Cincinnati Music Festival into what looks like is going to be the stage layout for Luke Combs.
I know. We're going to have a really good view of it now that I'm looking.
I know. Well, we got this back of the stage to us.
Honestly, the stage flew up today. You guys, you wouldn't believe how quick they, like, now
since
we overlook it. Time-lapse
photography. So yeah, you had the Cincinnati Music Festival with a list of stars. Luke Combs is coming to Paycor. Just to the east at Great American Ballpark, they just had the Foo Fighters show, which I was at, Sherry.
And what did you think?
And you went, and the night before, you were seeing Alanis Morissette.
I was at Riverbend.
At Riverbend, so the 90s are back.
And I know. And you know what? It made me think about a simpler time, to be honest. Like, you know, I actually was thinking that.
I probably would have gone to see Alanis Morissette had I not already committed to the Foo Fighters.
Tons of people did do
night.
Back-to-back.
I saw some people wearing their Alanis t-shirts at the Foo Fighters concert.
More power to them.
Yeah. And I mean, Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters, you can call them a 90s act, kind of. I mean, they've been around a long time. They just haven't stopped. But yes, what a Cincinnati moment for me, because I would put the Foo Fighters up there among my favorite bands. I call them the last great American rock band,
they are,
because nobody's doing what they do right now to that scale. That I would
how
call
was
honest
it in the stadium?
It was better than I thought. The sound was really good, and it was a fun place to watch it. You know, what was I going to say? Oh yeah, so they, you know, the Foo Fighters put on a great show. It's, I think, the third time I've seen them. I saw them in D.C. right after Dave Grohl broke his leg, and it was the first concert he did after he was, I think, in Denmark or something like that. He fell off the stage and broke his leg.
As happens.
And they wheeled him out on a giant rock and roll throne. Huh. So that was fun. But anyway, yeah, it was a great show. A lot of people there. The sound was good. I think the event staff did really well, just getting people in and out of there. Very little drama. But man, what a fun night. What a fun night.
I am sorry I missed it.
It was, yeah. I can just now tell you, I think I got most of my hearing back because it was loud.
That's a good concert.
It was loud.
Are you going to Green Day?
I don't think so. I've seen Green Day back in the day.
See, I've not seen Green Day. So now I feel like I have to go since I didn't go to the Foo Fighters.
Man,
we'll see.
I saw, Phil's going to Green Day. All right. I mean, it could be a last minute thing for me. You know, I have a good Green Day story. I went to see them in Davenport, Iowa, of all places, at a hockey arena. And they had a floor area that you had to have special tickets to get into. So, you know, no seats, so you could jump up and down and mosh and everything like that. And then most of the crowd was sitting in the seating bowl. And there was an opening act, and everybody behaved. And as soon as Green Day came out, hit the first chord, everybody in the seating bowl ran down to the floor, pushed the security people out of the way. It was mayhem. It was like the most giant out of control mosh pit. And Green Day, you know, Billy Joe loved it, just egged the crowd on. And the security just gave up. They're like, oh, well, I guess this is how it's going to go. And I did not jump down because I feared for my life. So, but yeah, I don't think that's going to happen to the Green Day. At the Green Day show now. I mean, most of the Green Day fans are,
I think somebody
in
posted
their 40s
a sign
and 50s.
From the Foo Fighters concert, posted a sign that was like, no crowd surfing. Oh. I was like, wow. Okay.
No, it was a good crowd. You know, Dave Grohl joked. He said, you know, something to the effect of, we're going to play some of our older stuff, some OG stuff for all the OG people out there. And then he pointed at someone and said, I know you're an old G because I'm looking at your 50-year-old face. And he was like, because I have a 50-year-old face. So, I mean, yeah, if you were with the Foo Fighters from the beginning, you're probably in your 40s and 50s now. So, but there were a lot of young people there. I was surprised. There was like a girl. She looked like maybe she was 10 or 11. And she was standing on her chair so she could see. And she was singing every song.
Oh, well, like, she has good parents.
Obviously, her parents raised her right, you know. So anyway, that was really
all
cool
right.
to see the
and
Foo Fighters.
And it's Cincinnati moment for sure. So many people were there.
A lot of people were there. And what, you know, I mean, rock and roll in a baseball stadium. Is there anything better than that?
I know. Really? Outside.
I think you're right. So anyway, well, should we call that a show?
Yes.
All right. Well, as usual, we thank everybody for listening. If you like local journalism and want to support it, subscribe to the Enquirer. You can do that on cincinnati.com. And I think that's all we need to say about that.
See you next week, you guys.
See you next week.